which will be a little earlier from the actual landing, and the landing itself will be 3:55. To know exactly if the rover made it to Mars. This thing weighs over 2,000 pounds on Earth anyway. It's one-third of that weight on Mars. Curiosity, the last big rover that we sent there back in 2004, which is still back in 2012, correction, which is still functioning after all these years, was around 2,000 pounds. This is around 200 pounds heavier than Curiosity, and a little bit bigger. And it has naturally more up-to-date modern instruments on board, including a helicopter. So if this thing gets to the surface, we will be able to hopefully see a helicopter take off on another planet, and up to five different times. So it has its own solar panel on top of the blades. It's got these 4-foot blades, 2 4-foot blades, which are spin opposite one another. Hopefully this thing works. It's really an engineering test. If it works out for this mission, they might use this for future missions as well. But it has to get there first. So it's right now it's on the cruise phase or stage. It's got a cruise piece of spacecraft that's going to separate from the rest of the spacecraft. And then the cruise phase will eventually, looks like that's going to crash into Mars, where the rest of it will come down using a heat shield. And the shield will slow it down from 13,000 miles per hour. It'll probably get down to around 1,200 miles an hour. At that point, parachute will open up. They have this, it's like a mortar, like a 4-inch tube. And this explosive mortar will push the parachute out. It's a big parachute, around 70 feet in diameter. And that should slow it down even further until the gets a little bit lower. And the heat shield will eventually pop off. They won't need that anymore. And at that point, it will be looking at the ground from up above in the computers on board. It has pictures of where it's going to be going. The idea is to go to Jezero Crater, this 30-mile diameter crater. That's where they need to land. And it has all kinds of hills, valleys, rocks, all kinds of things in the way. They need to land safely. And with the system that they have, it's called the Terrain Relative Navigation System. It already has pictures loaded in the computer, but it's going to be taking pictures on the way down, and it will compare it to what it knows on the computer on board. And at that point, it will be able to make certain adjustments. As thrust is on board to help push one way or the other. And once it gets even closer, the whole setup is located in the back shell. The vehicle and the sky crane will drop from the back shell. And as it drops, sky crane has 8 thrusters on board, which will tend to slow the whole setup down until it gets even closer to the ground. When it gets about a mile off the ground, by this time it's using a radar. You can tell exactly how high it is from the ground. Plus, it's still using the terrain relative navigation system to try to get itself to a proper location in Jezero Crater. But what happens next is the sky crane will start lowering Perseverance on 3 different cables, plus a data cable. And the cables will lower it down to a certain, around 50 feet from the sky crane. And then as it comes down, as the 6 wheels touch the ground, the sky crane will detect the difference in weight the second the wheels touch. At that point, computers will send a signal to these pyrotechnic devices, which fire these little guillotine devices, which will cut all the cables, and the 3 cables and the data cable. sky crane still firing its eight thrusters will fly away, maybe about a mile or so away from landing, and, you know, crash back into the surface. And at that point, hopefully the vehicle will be sitting on the Martian surface transmitting signals. All the way down, it'll be transmitting signals. It has a microphone on board. It has video cameras on board. So eventually, when they download all this information, that will be stored temporarily in these flash drives. They'll be transmitted up to the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, which is in orbit around Mars. And in turn, they will transmit it back to the Deep Space Network on Earth. And eventually, they'll find out all this information, get pictures. They'll hear maybe the parachute opening up. They might hear the wheels crunching onto the surface of the ground on Mars. They don't know what they're going to hear, but that's why they have microphones. Actually, there's two microphones on board, one for landing, and there's another microphone located on the mast. Once the mast opens up, the mast on the rover, and it has two cameras, laser beams, all kinds of equipment on this mast. And at the top of the mast, they also have a microphone. So as they drive around, you might be able to hear the wheels moving around. As they use the laser, they shoot a laser at every once in a while at these rocks, and they vaporize the rocks, and it actually brings a small piece of the rocks up to like a million degrees temperature for a split second, and that makes noises, this zapping type noise. They've had that system on Curiosity, but no microphone. Now they want to be able to hear it, and should be interesting. But after they land, they'll go through all the checks, make sure everything works. They'll, you know, make sure the mast gets upright correctly. There's a weather station on board. They'll make sure everything's working. And once everything's stable, they'll find a location on the planet to you know, a very clear area where they could lower the helicopter. The name of the helicopter is called Ingenuity. And that will lower itself from the bottom of Curiosity. You know, you have six wheels, and at the belly of it, you're going to have this helicopter that's going to eventually be sitting down on the planet. Once it separates itself from the rover will drive away, leaving the helicopter just sitting there. And at some point, within a month or so, they'll test that to see if it flies. So hopefully that works out. And again, that'll take place this Thursday. NASA TV will start covering it a little earlier, of course, around 2:15. They said they'll come on. And if you have a way to get to the NASA channel or online, I just go to you go to NASA.gov, and they'll have a link where you can just click on it, and the TV will come up. If you're home, you'll be able to see this. I'm sure it will be on the news at some point. Probably, Channel 2 or 4 or something. ABC, NBC. I'm sure they'll carry it, ABC. So that's the deal. I'll have my peanuts ready. It's a tradition that people at Jet Propulsion Laboratory, JPL, in Southern California, that built this Mars rover, Perseverance. Anytime they have an important launch or, you know, mid-course correction or, you know, or something, some important event, or like a landing on Mars or the moon or one of the planets, they have these peanuts out there. It's a tradition to, you know, bring some good luck, which started back in 1964. Anybody that's old enough would remember the earlier moon flights. You know, we just didn't send men to the moon and land there. We had to, you know, figure out what was there first. And they started with the Ranger missions, and eventually the orbiter missions. And they had the surveillance missions that landed and tested the surface. And then they got to the Apollo missions. But the Ranger missions were the first ones. The Rangers were being built by Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And in those early days, 1964, a couple of years before, they were launching, you know, Ranger 1, Ranger 2, 3, 4, 5, and number 6. And unfortunately, everyone, for one reason or another, was failing. It didn't make it to orbit. Problems getting to the moon. So one day, right before Ranger number 7, somebody broke out a bunch of peanuts, handed them out to Mission Control and the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. Sure enough, Ranger number 7 hit the moon exactly where they wanted to. They got data back, and ever since then, they do this hoping for good luck, and hopefully that's the way it will go for them this Thursday. Let me drop it for any questions. WS2M. Okay, I don't hear any echo link people. Another Mars mission that was successful this week. Last Tuesday this happened, and they had live coverage from the UAE, the United Arab Emirates. They sent up a spacecraft to Mars. Again, they launched roughly 6 months ago in July. And the name of their spacecraft was called Hope. They don't have a launch facility in the UAE, so they paid Japan to launch the vehicle on top of one of their H-2A rockets. Japan uses two big rockets for different purposes. They have the H-2A and the H-2B. H-2B they use specifically to launch cargo vehicles to the International Space Station. And that's one of their contributions to the space station. Outside of the largest module on the space station itself called Kaibo. But that's what they do, and they launch Hope to Mars. And UAE, they have a mission control there. And they will, again, watch the telemetry as it's coming back. There's nothing that they could do with 11, 12-minute lag time. So all these missions are, well, autonomous. And sure enough, they saw the signal, and they went into orbit. They don't have a lander like we do, but it's the first time that they've managed to put a spacecraft into orbit around Mars. It's going to be a very high orbit. They're going out to like 40,000 kilometers, maybe around 1,000 kilometers at perigee. Apogee would be around 40,000. So they're going to get a view from what's going on pretty far out. They'll compare those notes with MAVEN. MAVEN is a NASA spacecraft that's in a lot closer doing similar work, studying the off-gassing of different molecules, oxygen, and carbon dioxide, whatever atmosphere Mars has, they study it. But sure enough, they were successful in getting their vehicle into orbit, and well, it's working well for them on that. Another country involved with Mars is China. Now, again, 6 months ago, they launched a vehicle called Tianwen, and Tianwen 1. They launched that from a new spaceport down in China. They're kind of secretive over there, so we don't know much except from, you know, what we could detect. We didn't know exactly what time they were going to launch, but we know they did launch. And their crew stage worked out fine. There were amateur radio operators that picked up on their signal, so they could hear their signal as they're traveling through space anytime they transmitted back to China. And sure enough, on Wednesday, the day after Hope got there from the United Arab Emirates, it was China's turn, and they have this 600-pound thruster that came on for, I think, around 10 or 11 minutes to try to slow itself down so that Mars would pull it into its gravitational field to go into orbit. And again, China you know, everything's top secret, but you had amateur radio operators here on Earth, and they could tell from the Doppler signal that sure enough it was changing, and they confirmed that as far as they were concerned, the spacecraft did go into orbit. Later on, China did confirm that their spacecraft is now in orbit. Let me drop it. So, in a couple of months, I think, a lot of months, I think around May, it's going to go, stay into orbit around Mars, taking pictures and getting information from the surface, from its orbiter. But at some point, they're going to decide where they're going to land, if they do have a lander on board. So that lander will eventually separate from the mothership, and they'll use the mothership as their relay system. And they have their own receivers back on Earth. They have one in Argentina that's going to be picking up the signal. They don't use the deep space network with NASA. The United States, we don't have agreements with China to do this type of thing. The United Arab Emirates, of course, we're friendly with, and we did use the deep space network with them to receive the signals from Hope, but not China. So Tianwen will eventually send the lander down, land on Mars, and on the lander they have a rover. So they have this 600-pound rover that's going to separate from the lander. And again, that has six wheels. It does not have a radio isotope generator, so it's not nuclear powered. They have solar panels, so it's more like Spirit and Opportunity that we used years ago in 2004. January of 2004, we landed. First, we landed Spirit and then Opportunity, and those things, one of them worked for 14 years. So they might be able to do the same thing. They're doing everything all in one. When we started out in the United States, we sent spacecraft to Mars. We did flybys. Then we did finally got into orbit. And then eventually we sent down landers, the Vikings, the two Viking missions in 1977, one on one side of the planet, one on the other side of the planet. We worked our way up to it. And then eventually we sent, finally in 1995, we sent, 1996, it landed, was Pathfinder. Off of Pathfinder, we had the Sojourner rover, about the size of a microwave oven, and that's how we did it. We step by step, and then eventually after that, like I said, Opportunity and Spirit, and Curiosity, and then now this new one, Perseverance. So that's the way it's worked for us. Not China. They sent this thing out, orbiter, lander, and rover all in one. So I think they're really rolling the dice, but, they pick up a lot of engineering from, all these other countries that have done these things. Maybe they might be able to do it. We'll see as time goes on. I'll let you know in May. This is WS2N. Any comments, questions? Okay, nothing. All right, let me just drop it for a second, see if there's any echo links.
WB2BXL here, how's it
coming? WB2BXL. Hi, Frank, how are you? I'm Philadelphia.
Okay, very good, Roy. Anyway, yeah, very interesting. I remember hearing somewhere on any space missions, or at least more intentionally on the amateur frequencies, and I was relying in part on amateurs to track their spacecraft, despite their level of secretiveness. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what frequencies they were transmitting on. and naturally, whatever they are, I'm sure these, I'm not even sure the amateurs that don't have their call letters or anything that, that receive the signals, that, you know, we'll probably hear that shortly. I wouldn't be surprised if they put their names and call letters on Newsline, which I always listen to on right after the Flopper Shop on Monday night. Alarm Bar Club always retransmits that. I bet they say something on who these guys were. But naturally, whatever frequencies or whatever mode they're transmitting on, I'm sure they hear. Of course, it doesn't have to be any amateur bands. These guys could, you know, you could listen to anything. It's not like they're transmitting up to it, you know. So we'll have to wait and see, Frank. Anything else before I go on?
Not really. I have an Audible subscription. I use one of my credits to get Avi Loeb's book, but I haven't looked at it yet beyond the introduction where he seems to kind of hedge his bets by saying that what he's talking about is a hypothesis and not a theory or not proof or anything. So, anyway, I thought you'd get a kick out of it. I did get his book and we'll read it at some point. Anyway, yeah, I think, if I remember correctly, hearing probably on Newsline about 2 years ago that they're in S-band, which is, of course, where all NASA spacecraft were years ago. I think I just heard today, where did I hear that I think Perseverance is going to be up on X-band. I'm forgetting. I know I heard that someplace today. I forget where I picked that up from. Maybe Everyday Astronaut. You probably heard that also because I think you follow him too. Anyway, seriously, go on with the show. WB2BX up.
Okay, you're right. They transmit on X-band. They also transmit UHF, and they'll send send UHF, you know, a high amount of data up to MRO, Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, which has been in Mars orbit for, it seems like 20 years. A long time. In fact, they need another one up there. But they could use Maven as a backup. They have even Mars Express by the European Space Agency. That's still going around in orbit. We have a radio that's capable of that as well. So there's a lot of different ways they can make sure they get the signals back to Earth, to our deep space network. So when Hope landed for the UAE, I saw the signals were coming back to Madrid. Madrid was, you know, we have the deep space network, Madrid, Goldstone, and Canberra in Australia. At the time, the Earth was in the right position, and it was facing, Spain was the direct shot for that spacecraft. I'm not sure which one will be used once your Perseverance lands, but like you said, they'll be coming back on X-band. That's like an insurance that, you know, we'll hear the signals, and there's different tones that they hear, and different tones tell them different things. Parachutes open, heat shield separated, another different tone comes back, the rocket engines are firing on the sky crane, landing and all, you know, different tones tell them different things. You'll see different reactions from mission control. I'm sure they'll all be sitting there with masks, but sitting there with their peanuts still. So it should be pretty cool. Another event that's coming up actually tonight. Okay, let the idea go by. This is WSQN. Name here is Paul for the SpaceNet Report for the TechNet. And the event tonight is a Russian Progress ship. They call it Progress 77. And it's being launched from Kazakhstan. and it will be launch time is 11:45, but NASA will start covering it before that, 11:15, probably a half hour before launch time. Now it's an unmanned vehicle that launches cargo up to the International Space Station. And they've done this, you know, some 60 or 70 times now between the Mir flights and the International Space Station. This, you know, becoming almost an everyday occurrence. But, you know, maybe 3-4 times a year at some point. Usually around 3 times a year. But anyway, Progress is going to launch. And the reason I'll be interested in, not so much the launch, although I will watch that tonight after the net, 12:45 at launch time. And the reason you can watch it is NASA puts anything that has to do with the space station and its partners, 20 different countries that are involved in the space station. In this case, Russia will be launching the cargo. It's part of the space station, therefore NASA puts it on NASA TV. And so you get to watch the thing launch. In a couple of days, it will be docking with the Piers module located on the near or the bottom side of the space station, on the Russian section of the space station. And what's different about it is once it docks, they'll open up the door, unload the cargo, and then eventually put stuff in that the garbage that the Russians don't want. They'll be putting it into the Progress. The goal, of course, is to get it becomes a garbage truck. Eventually, Progress will undock and it would burn up over the South Pacific. But in this case, when they undock the module that they're attached to, the Piers docking module. Piers has been attached to the space station for almost 20 years now. That module has been used for docking other Progress vehicles, or it's been used for docking Soyuz manned space vehicles. It's also also on the side of it has an opening where they've used it for EVAs, you know, extravehicular activity spacewalks. So, you know, it's a functioning module. But it's time for it to go. And what they're going to do is disconnect it. So it will separate the Piers module from the Zvezda part of the, you have different modules, the Russian main modules, the Zvezda, and that's followed by Zarya, and then the next module. Well, the first big module that they have is Zvezda, and it's one of the ports coming out of it is occupied by this Piers module that will be separated by this Progress vehicle. The Progress vehicle naturally has fuel and everything that will separate and drift away from the space station. And the whole setup, Piers and Progress 77, will burn up over the South Pacific in due time. And the reason for it is toward the end of this year, the Russians are going to be sending up another very big module called Nauka. It means science. If you translate it, it means science in Russian. So Nauka is going to be going up, launched I believe that they're going to use the proton rocket to launch it. One time I believe they thought they might be able to launch on their new Angara rocket, but nevertheless, they're going to launch this thing. This thing's like 43 feet long. It's a big module. It's roughly 14 feet in diameter, a little shy of that, but it's just as big as the existing Zvezda module that's been up there since 1999. So once that is docked, they're going to have a lot more room for more experiments. Another person, at one time, the Russians were talking about only launching 2 people at a time, because they didn't have enough science work to do for them. Plenty of science work to do on the NASA side with the European Space Agency and that group, but on the Russian side, not as much. But now they don't have that. This Nokia module has been planned on being sent up for the last, I think, 12 years ago. They wanted to send it up, but they ran into technical problems, then they ran into financial problems and political problems, and one thing led to another. And finally, they were able to, they're going to be able to launch this thing. It's going to have more sleeping quarters, so more cabins for people. It's also going to have another bathroom, so now you have a third permanent bathroom. Will be attached to the International Space Station. It'll have the capability of to take over from ZESA. ZESA is a primary vehicle that it gets fueled up, and they're able to move the space station using that. They can accelerate it, get out of the way of debris, things like that. It should be pretty good, to help extend the life of the space station as well. They're talking about not only going to 2024 with the space station, but now they're talking about possibly going to 2030. So that's a good sign. Let me drop it for any questions. This is WS2N. Name here is Paul. Okay, one other topic I wanted to just cover. I talked about Lucy before. Lucy is a mission that NASA is putting together. They're funded. They're putting parts together. And the idea is to go to the Trojan asteroid belt. The asteroids. You have not the belt, but the location in space. You have Jupiter. Jupiter has different gravitational points. It has an L1, it has an L2, it has an L3, 4, and 5. L4 is a gravitational area where things don't tend to move. It's about 45 degrees in front of Jupiter in relationship to the Sun and the planet itself. And then there's an L5 that lags about 45 degrees behind Jupiter. And in those areas, they have an area called the Trojan areas, where there are asteroids that were part of the asteroid belt that have been captured by Jupiter, but never went into orbit around Jupiter. They just got, stuck there.
That
they're
time complete.
Going in orbit around the Sun, ahead of Jupiter, and then the L5s are lagging behind Jupiter. So they just sit there. And they've never been investigated, and Lucy will be doing that. Lucy has been, they have now picked a rocket to be able to launch the Lucy mission. They were originally going to use the new NASA Space Launch System, SLS. Now, from what I am reading now, they believe they're going to use the SpaceX, most likely the SpaceX Falcon Heavy, where you put 3D Falcon rockets together and put your payload on top, and off it goes. So it's going to take a lot longer. I think it's 2024 before it gets to the first group on the Trojan L4 area. And then they'll spend some time investigating the asteroids in that group, and then it will rocket off. They'll fire the engines, and that won't occur until 2029 or so. So this is a long-term deal. Won't launch until I think it's going to launch in I wrote it down here somewhere. Anyway, a few years from now, they'll launch, and it'll take many years, probably about 6 years or so, to get to the first group of asteroids and then to another group. Anyway, we'll follow that in the future, and we'll see what happens. WS2N. here's another launch that has definitely been approved by NASA for SpaceX to use the Falcon Heavy. That's, they call it the HALO, and the PPE sections that are going to be the first sections of the Gateway space station that will be orbiting the moon. You have the HALO, which is the acronym for Habitation and Logistics Outpost. That will be able to, that will, you know, you'll be able to put people in there, you know, living quarters, galleys, bathrooms, the whole bit. And then you'll need another module, and that will be the PPE. Now, that's the, it's not the PPE that you hear with all the COVID conversations. This is this stands for power and propulsion element. Power and propulsion element. We'll have big solar panels, plenty of fuel on board, and with the, and the panels will be big enough to not only supply the Gateway space station, but it will also be able to, let's say, recharge or keep operating visiting spacecraft, either cargo vehicles that come from Earth or manned spacecraft that come from Earth, such as the Orion spacecraft, or we'll even be able to power and resupply a landing craft that will go down to the moon. They have one landing craft that's being designed now, and that's being built by Blue Origin, Draper, and Lockheed. There were three companies that are involved with this lander. One is going to be a transfer vehicle to get you down to, you know, low lunar orbit. The other one's going to be a lander to actually land, and then the other one's going to be that'll be the descent module, and then you'll have the ascent module. So, three different companies involved in that. But, you know, to keep it recharged, all the batteries recharged, you're going to need solar panels, and that'll be part of this. This PPE, power and propulsion element. Anyway, these two elements will be launched together, the habitation and the power modules will be bolted together on Earth, set into a gigantic fairing on top of a SpaceX vehicle, a heavy vehicle, which is essentially three Falcon 9 boosters bolted together with a second stage on top of that, and then on top of that, this massive fairing that's going to contain the first two modules of another space station that will be not orbiting Earth, but the moon, called Gateway. Any comments or questions before I turn it back to Roy? This is WS2N for the SpaceNet Report for the TechNet. Good timing for the Selden ID. Okay, I'll turn it back to Roy. Tomorrow night is Monday night, so we'll have the Club InfoNet. That comes on at 8:30, not 8 o'clock on these repeaters, followed by the Swap and Shop with George, who does that, KD2FIU. And followed by Newsline, like we talked about before, so I can find out all about. I'm going to definitely find out, I bet on it, who received those signals from the Chinese spacecraft. If not, they tend to send emails to everybody. That's on the list. We'll find out sooner or later. Back to you, Roy, AC2GS. This is WS2N.
Thank you very much, Paul, for the space report and for all that you do. And thanks to everyone who participated tonight. As always, you guys and gals, occasionally there are gals, make or break a technical net. So I really do appreciate all of your participations each Sunday night. Once again, just to remind everyone, if you have any questions and you can't get on the TechNet, or topics you'd like to hear discussed, or puzzles you'd like me to share, or something that you would like me to tell Paul about, to take a look at and to comment for a future SpaceNet report, the email address to reach me is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. Links are available, a lot of interesting links tonight at my link page, roy.ac2gs.com. And Mike, KC2NJI, has a wonderful archive of technical nets going all the way back to September of 2006. So please check that out as well. That's amateurradio.tv. And as I often end these technical nets with a bit of wisdom from one of the wisest men that I've known, Dick, K2RIW, he would often end the technical nets with kind to each other. As I've often said, that's good advice for any time, but especially in this age of COVID, this is certainly a good time to be kind to each other. Be safe, be well, have a good week, and I hope to talk to you again next Sunday night, and hopefully the repeat-up won't be so wonky. I will be clear, except for maybe a little bit of transmission testing of my different radios, just to triple and quadruple check that there's nothing wrong here. So this is AC2GS. Have a safe week, and I'm clear.
Thank you, Roy. Great net. KD2UQK.
Seven three, Roy. BD2BX.
More power, Roy. I heard 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I mean, you're making it, but tough. WS one. Yeah, I know it's not possible. Give you an idea what it sounds like. It's like you're off by 5 KC, to give you an idea.
KD2OGB, just taking a listen.
KD2OGB, WS1. Waiting to see if Roy makes another transmission. I don't think it's for.
WS2N, KD2OGB. Yep, I remember you, Paul. I don't think we've spoken in person before, but yeah, I've heard you checking a few times on the InfoNet, and you're responsible for the space report on the TechNet. I'm done with work tonight, chilling until it's time to get out of Jamaica, but figure I'd stop by and say hello, even though the TechNet's done tonight. How are you doing?
Okay, very good. Yeah, we just finished. But very good. I missed the name. You're leaving Jamaica. I don't know. They said this morning a dollar store went up in flames on Jamaica Avenue in Jamaica. Wonder if you were near that. A couple hundred firemen involved. I haven't seen the news. I just heard it on the radio.
Yeah, Roger, I'm going to take it nice and slow going home from Babylon. That's where my car is parked. Tomorrow I'm doing some overtime west of Jamaica. And then Tuesday, going to meet up with somebody in Bethpage to part ways with an antenna that I don't need. Maybe I'll stop by Applebee's in Farmingdale. What's interesting is I seem to be doing some more solo dining. Now, I only did it maybe like once or twice, and I'm talking about actual restaurants, like TGI's, steak places, and Applebee's. I went to Applebee's a couple days ago, and I probably will be doing that again this week.
That sounds good. Sounds like we're slowly going to get back to normal, hopefully. Okay, I'm going to turn on NASA TV. They're supposed to have a launch in that half hour. They'll start covering it now. It's just a progress launch, a cargo vehicle that's going to be launched from Kazakhstan. But I want to see if they give any about what its final mission will be, which I talked about earlier on the news. Back to you. I don't hear Royce making any more transmissions, but, I'm sure probably just a problem that will straighten out by next week. He did good, but he was coming through a different repeater. Katie to OGB, WS, come on.
1234, anyone hear me?
Katie to UH, better than the first time.
Try again, AC2GSWS.
Okay, this is another radio with another antenna going at around 3/4, to be about 60 watts. Again, don't think it's the antenna or the radio.
Well, you're making it, but noisy. A lot more trouble than I used to hear, And, of course, you've always gotten good reports, let's say from George. Could hear you on the input. So, there's really nothing wrong, with your audio, with your microphone or anything. Some kind of a problem between your QTH and the repeater. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly the details of David, but he was kind of out of it. Well, he had to hook up to the UHF link as well.
Yeah, that was a little tough. You got to get this worked out. You won't be able to, for an emergency it would be okay, but you would not be able to do the net the way it is.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. Basically, like I said before, I have a GP3, I have a GP6. They're located in different places. They work perfectly fine for all the other repeaters I use, so I'm not quite sure what the heck's going on there. So we tried two antennas at this point, two radios. I don't think it would make much difference if I hook up another radio to the second antenna. It's just there's something wonky between me and Glen Oak. It might be fine for guys in Queens, but for me in Brooklyn, it's not so fine.
Okay, well, I heard that 100%, but, you could tell it's just not right. But that was, 100% copy. And I don't know, propagation always seems better the later the night. If you would have tried this earlier at 8 o'clock, maybe it would be worse. Now, I'm assuming you're on high power, whatever high power is on that radio, correct?
Yes, this is about all that I can pump out to you under these circumstances. I can't get any higher than this one.
Yeah. I don't know. Not too good explaining the audio. It's a high pitch, the voice of Al Jackson, talking through a megaphone type of thing. Back to you.
I don't know. I'm just using some random mic selection. I haven't used my Flex for VHF in a year or so, so they're a little rusty and I need to tweak them, but I've been using the IOM 7100. It's working fine. Back in the old days, I could throw 5 watts at the repeater. It was great. Matter of fact, last Monday, I got on the repeater and used low power, and everyone heard me. It was fine. So, again, not a clue. Definitely, something is incredibly wrong with the sensitivity of the repeater's receiver. Either it's desensing, or it's folding back, or there's something strange going on. I don't know.
Yeah, that was okay. Now this is not the Flex radio. This is you said an ICOM, is that right?
This device that I'm talking to you right now is on my Flex. I usually don't use the Flex for the technical net because my ICOM 71 lets me stream the audio, record the audio, keep going in and going out in a much less complicated way than the Flex uses. So I gravitated to the ICOM. So every time, for the most part, you've heard me for the last 2 years, it has been on my ICOM 7100. Sometimes it was connected to a Comet GT3, sometimes a Comet GT6, but it's always been the ICOM 7100.
Okay, so this is the IC7100. No, okay, wait. I'm still trying to get it straight. But anyway, which one has more power, the IC7100 or Flex?
Probably the Flex has a little bit more power, but there's nothing that significant. I mean, I can talk a bit through. I have an after thruster, which I got when people were giving me some problems about interference. I mean, I'll throw it on for giggles and we'll see what it does.
Okay. I'll sit here if you want to switch radios back and forth. I got 20 minutes at least before that rocket launch. I'll stand by if you want to switch radios around, Roy.
Well, I thought we would just play with the amplifier. So now I'm putting up about 70 watts, which is a ridiculous amount of watts for the repeater. So how is that?
Yeah, that's a big difference. You're much better. You know, you're not full quieting, but you're much better. No problem. You could do a net with that. I had a radio on a Yaesu, what is it, 2700. I got it downstairs. I toasted it, running 70 watts all the time. I cooked that one.
I put it up a little bit more. Now it's going at 100 watts. But I did this once when there were some jammer problems. And it was very weird. It overheated the power poles. Are cranky little things. If you don't disconnect them and reconnect them every so often, they build up a wee bit of oxidation. So there's a little local resistance, and so there is current that's dissipated as heat. And what happened was my power pole got so hot that it melted the plastic case. And since it's a friction feed that the two metal plates push together, if you relax the plastic around it, the contact opens. So towards the end of my TechNet that session, I just fell off the end because my power pole connection failed because the plastic holding the screen is softened and relaxed.
I can see that happening. Absolutely. You know. It's no problem with that high power. So, you know, it's either you're going to burn out another radio by running high power like this, or you're going to have to do something different with your antenna. I know that's a major problem. Or the club is going to have to relocate our antenna to a different building. Whatever it is, you know, whatever the problem is, I'm sure it's with them. See that we can relocate your QTH. Do you want to move to Queens or something? Right back to you.
Someone joked with me when my antennas were down that the Limewire should come over and put up a Yagi array pointed directly at Glen Oaks for the benefit of the technical net. That didn't exactly happen. I was going to put up, in addition, a Yagi. My rotator, though, is not functioning up to par, and actually Andy is taking a look at it to see if he can figure out why it's not working.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's why, I got the 10-element cushprep Yagi, naturally it's vertically polarized, for FM, and I have that on the rotator. So, I liked it, just for fun, especially years ago when we had the delay a big delay between the two repeaters. I always wanted to transmit through Glen Oaks. So, I mean, that's the way to go for me. But now with the repeater, the way it is in the last month, you know, I've just turned my Yagi, I pointed it to Selden, which is about, I don't know, 8 miles away from me. You know, I could blow that thing up from here. So I have no problem with that. I'm just leaving it like that until, well, unless, when I hear that you come back to normal, then I'll swing it back and point it back to the city. AC2GSWS2M.
Okay, very good. I think once they fix the repeater problem, it will address a lot of these issues. The trouble, though, I'm trying to keep too many plates spinning in, in addition to doing the TechNet, I'm sending out a signal on the audio stream because there's some people who just can't connect to the other means, and I'm trying to record. And now I can't do it because I'm putting out so much on the Flex that I'm desensing the front end of the other radio on the other antenna. So it's just coming up as noise. So, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to get all these balls in the air at once.
I have a similar problem. I, you know, rather than put, you know, some kind of system, you know, between two antennas to transmit and receive at the same time, I try to receive on different HDs. Again, you know, I wind up with noise, all kinds of problems. Once in a while it works. If I put earphones on, you know, I can do it, but that's annoying. Dick used to do that all the time. He had earphones on 100% of the time during the net. And that's not for me. It's okay for Zoom, but not for 2 meters. You know, I'll use it for HF, of course, you know, if I'm trying to hear something out in the distance. But you're doing good with the super-duper power. Back to you, Ron.
Keep that as an option. Again, it buggers the hell out of me trying to pipe it into anything, but I'll see what the options are. Dick used to do that, and there are latency issues. It sort of depends. I mean, thankfully, Dick's equipment was all the old style, so there was no real ultimate severe latency. Nothing that he went through used the digital signal processors that slows things down, because God forbid if I try to listen to my Flex while I talk to my through my ICOM, I go batty because there's something like a 2 or 3 second latency issue with something like that. If you've ever had the pleasure of listening to yourself on a delay, it turns you into a babbling fool, unfortunately.
Oh yes, I've tried it. You know, when he has, you know, when the two repeaters, Selden and Glen Oaks were linked to the internet, there was definitely a second and a half delay, and not easy to do. And Dick thought nothing of it. You know who does a good job is that Andy at WHCDL. You know, he can tell what he's doing. You know, he knows when there's a problem right away, and that's pretty good. Okay, Roy, I'm gonna go. Yeah, my rocket does. Unless you want me to stand by now. Wait, let me clear this up. Are you on your Flex or are you on the IC7100 right now?
I am on my Flex with a RM Italy amplifier boosting the signal higher than per usual. I can probably get it up to about 160 watts before things start to melt.
You're doing good. You're doing good. The only thing is you're trebly, very trebly with the Flex. You know, your other microphone setup is, you know, it's got a bassy, a real strong sound to it when that's working good. But if you can't get the power out of it, then, you know, it's not going to work. I hope they're able to figure out what's wrong with the repeater. Time, you know, with the weather the way it is, you know, and they have to make appointments to do it. Doesn't sound like an easy task. Back to you, Roy. I'm going to sign AC2GS WS to it.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Paul. Hopefully they'll figure it out. They're smart. They're clever. And I know the weather is against us all, but again, this too shall pass. We'll figure something out.